Okay, so I think we've all had nights like these. Nights that begin early with maybe just a couple of friends, three, four, maybe as many as five, and people start texting and calling and sending out messages to other people, and eventually other people start to join the party. You start pulling tables together. Hey, waiter, we're going to need more chairs. This is great. Can we get a couple more menus down there? Top everybody off. This round of drinks is on me. And the night keeps going on, and no one drops out. It gets better, and it's fun. It's party time. Everyone's got a full tank of gas. Maybe a couple of people step out for a little smoky. You know what I'm talking about? But then the night just continues, and it's a lot of fun, and it's one of those nights you say to yourself, I'm going to remember this night forever. And then at the end of the night, the lights come on, and that same guy that was bringing you drinks and bringing your supper and looking the other way when you stepped outside for something, all of a sudden brings you something called the bill, and the party's over, and you have to pay. Greg, let's begin the podcast by talking about the Chicago Blackhawks, shall we?
Now, the most beautiful thing about that metaphor is essentially the buildup to it is you're describing a bandwagon, which I'm sure a lot of Chicago Blackhawks haters at this point are nodding in agreement with your description.
No.
Yeah.
It's something.
Let's first of all not try to strain our muscles, not try to contort ourselves too much as we pat ourselves on the back for properly prognosticating the Predators' victory over the Blackhawks in round one.
I really stayed away from Twitter. I got tons of texts from people saying, when's it coming? And nope, staying away, staying off, staying away from just reading the tweets roll in. But no. Listen, I've made enough bad predictions in my life not to peacock this one and puff out my chest about getting one right.
Look, but, I completely agree with you. You don't want to gloat. I'll simply say that I picked the Predators for two sound, logical reasons. I'm amazing at my job, and I know more about hockey than most people who ever played the game. So
you know what?
Those two things combined allowed me to pick the Predators.
You know who did a lot of the heavy lifting on the reasons for the not a sweep? No one's calling a sweep in this one. I haven't seen anyone that called a sweep. Some people did predict the Preds over the Chicago Blackhawks, but Dello did a lot on Twitter. Tyler Dello did a lot, and a lot of people sort of looked at it and said, that kind of makes sense. And I think a lot of people may have gone to look at regulation wins over the season and said, hang on, Chicago's got 37 and Nashville's got 35. Maybe these two teams are a lot closer than we think they are. We think this is loggerheads and Chicago should steamroll Nashville. And you know what? You know who said it best? Who summed it all up? Actually, we've had the two best bits of analysis in this postseason. One's come from a player, one's come from a coach. More on Bruce Boudreau in a second. But Pat Kane, after the game, said, look, we had 50 wins, but a lot of those were overtime. Maybe we had an overinflated sense of how good we were. He's right.
It's possible. The two biggest problem areas for Chicago that I think were predictable were the blue line, which got pretty old. I mean, if you're going to talk about this team being old, and I don't think that's necessarily a fair assessment, but you could say the defense is old. You could say they've lost a step, and they've played a lot of hockey, and I think the blue line is one point of concern. But the other big point of concern that wasn't a point of concern during the regular season but became a huge one in the postseason were the kids. The Blackhawks are only going to be as good as their annual reinforcements are, because they always have to cut players because they're top-heavy in salary for the core. We get it. And in years in which the reinforcements are good, they win the cup. And in years in which the reinforcements aren't as good, they go out in the first round, which is what they did in consecutive years after the Buffalo and Ladd group left. And the kids, especially Nick Schmaltz, who played upwards of 15 minutes a game and registered two shots on goal with no points, the kids didn't play well. And it hurt them real bad when that is a good portion of your grunts that aren't playing well, that are overwhelming the series.
I'm glad you mentioned the blue line off the top. Here's a scary thing about the Chicago Blackhawks right now. And Detroit is feeling this, and that's why, you know, they're grabbing, you saw in the draft, you know, grab Dennis Cholowski, you know, real fast. I mean, they're trying to shore up the blue line now, grabbing, you know, Joe Hickett's unsigned or undrafted out of Victoria Royals Western Hockey League a couple of years ago. They know that they're hurting on the back end, and they need to get defensemen in ASAP. Can you tell me off the top of your head not just you, Greg, but anybody right now, who the number one blue line prospect for the Chicago Blackhawks is. And please, don't tell me it's Chad Kris. He's been awful. Ask anyone at BU. He has regressed the last couple of seasons, but they don't have one.
Carl,
there's no one coming. Okay. There's not like that. Oh yeah, but we got a couple in the pipeline. No.
Yeah.
There's no help coming there. Like, yeah, Stan Bowman, you know, this is two first round exits in consecutive years for the Chicago Blackhawks, and Stan Bowman's talking about how this is unacceptable and this is not Blackhawks and there's going to be changes and this won't happen. But this is a team, much like Detroit previous to it, who was the measuring stick in the Western Conference and just isn't anymore. Like, you always ask yourself one profound question about every team in the NHL. It's pretty simple. Are you getting better? Or are you getting worse? The Blackhawks getting any better? Nope. They had a great run. The modern day, you know, like when I hate throwing around, you know, the obvious term that I'm dancing around here, but you know, if you look at, you know, post lockout 2005, that's as close to the D word as you're going to see.
It's a dynasty.
And good for them. But the bill has arrived. The bill has now come. Now we're going to say, hang on, that shot of Seabrook was how much? Hang on, how much was that Hossa entree? Wait a minute, really? This is what we're paying?
Yeah, but here's the worst part about it, is that you can't send any of the dishes back. You can't. Think of it this way. They will have, when Panarin starts his new deal next year, assuming that Hossa is still on the books, and if he's not, they have to pay a cap recapture.
Recapture, yeah.
Assuming that Hossa is still on the books, they will have over $31 million committed to four forwards. That goes along with if they come back with Seabrook, Keith, and Yarmolson, and they probably will because they all have no move clauses. That means that you've got over $31 million in four forwards and over $16 million in three defensemen. So you're looking at $47 million tied up in seven players, and that's why you look at the rest of this roster, and this is the current roster of the Chicago Blackhawks. You know how many forwards make more than $1 million this season?
How many forwards on the Blackhawks make $1 million or more? I'm going to guess six.
Five. And five. Everybody else is under $1 million. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's how they're working it these days because they can't work it any other way. So
Hang on. That's okay. That's okay when you're winning. That's fine. That's all right. You don't get in trouble when you pay your big guys. Like you get in trouble when you pay the bottom guys. I don't disagree with that philosophy.
But that's not my point, though. My point is that if you're Stan Bowman and you're like, this is unacceptable and changes have to be made and bliggity bliggity blah blah, well, every single person that makes coin on your team outside of Panarin next season has a no move clause. So what are you going to do? Where are the changes? Swapping out a guy making $800,000 for another guy making $800,000? Like, where are the changes? How do you do it?
That's what I'm getting to. The bill's arrived. The party's over. Right? Like, they'll still be a good team. Just, we're done seeing the great Chicago Blackhawks. I think we're done seeing the measuring stick team in the Western Conference. Oh, Chicago's this. Chicago's... Well, no. Now, next year, after two first-round exits in a row, they're just going to be a really good team in the Western Conference. And slowly but surely, you know, unless something enormous happens... The same thing that happened to the Detroit Red Wings will happen to the Chicago Blackhawks. Don't you think? Like, unless, like, the only thing that I was thinking of, like, there's only one huge move I think you can make. And that is, and I know he's got the I'm not going anywhere clause. I think Patrick Kane is the only thing you can do.
Yeah, he is. But, again, like you said, he's got the clause, which means... There's probably only one place you could send him. And that is back home. And how quick would Terry Pegula make that trade?
Yeah, pretty fast.
But what do you get back for him is the question. Like, what would be a reasonable package for one of the top five scorers?
Buffalo doesn't have it. Buffalo doesn't have the package for him.
It starts at Ritsalainen.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we can talk about the Sabres back end in a second if you want. No, thank you. Not interested. No, thanks.
It starts with the
Penn State University
hockey program.
Okay, that now you go. Goes... So a couple. Okay, starts with a couple of oil wells. First of all, that's the beginning. That's where we're starting.
Yeah.
Hang on a second. That's not worse business. It is now. Like, honestly, I don't know how Chicago gets out of this one. Like, to me, this one sort of rings Doug Wilson is pissed off at his San Jose Sharks, and there's going to be big changes.
Yeah. That's a great comparison. That's actually the perfect comparison because there's nothing they can do. And unless the six guys that make coin on this team decide that they want to go someplace, there's nothing that Stan or any of these guys can do.
They had a great run. Like, I know I'm writing an obituary for them. They're still a really good team. They're just not going to be, like, I think the years, the seasons of the Chicago Blackhawks winning Stanley Cups in this era with this core, just done.
All right. Let's talk about the winners of the series. I will pat myself on the back by acknowledging and identifying that the Predators are one of these teams that was middling in the regular season and in the right first round series would kind of find their identity. And they did. And they had extra wind in their sails because they really wanted to beat Chicago because they're tired of all those pricks coming into their arena and cheering for the Blackhawks when Chicago comes to town. But the one thing that nobody saw was Pekka. And that's really the story of the series. I mean, that guy, holy Jesus. The first two games in Chicago were basically nails in the coffin. To play that well on the road in the first two games of a series is insane when your previous two trips to the postseason were sub 910 save percentage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the series for me is Pekka Rinne.
Series for me is puck goes in, puck goes out. Series for me is the Nashville blue line, right? Find me a better blue line at breaking the puck out than Nashville. You know?
Yeah.
We're eventually going to get around to Montreal and we'll talk about how they couldn't break the puck out. Anyhow, in 2017, the question you ask yourself was, what do you want a defenseman to do? To me, it's simple. Puck goes in, puck goes out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
I don't care about blocking shots. And I don't know. Puck comes in, puck goes out.
And Chicago didn't get much zone time. They didn't really get any chance to create. It was really great. It was an impressive performance by the Predators. And most impressive was the rally in game three. That's the one that really knocked my socks off. Like, yeah. That's the game where we're all watching it. And
was
Chicago
two-nothing?
Gets up 2-0.
Yeah.
You're all like, oh, here we go again. The old pros aren't going to let this happen to them. And then Philip Forsberg scores twice, and you're just like, oh, my God, what happened?
Yeah, default to skill. And here's the thing, too. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before. What impresses me about the Nashville Predators, as we continue to hear this mantra about you need to draft, you need to develop, that's the only way you'll be successful in the NHL. Forsberg, trade. Johansson, trade. Neal, trade. Yarncroak, trade. Fisher, trade. Subban, trade. Go right down the list. Pretty much the entire forward group, you know, outside of your, you know, Kevin Fialas and your Victor Arvidssons are trades. I'm talking about your key guys here. It's all trades. Like David Poyles, I remember there was so much talk last year with the Subban. The Subban Weber deal, and when people were out of ammunition for trying to defend it from Montreal's perspective, all they fell back on is, oh, so you think Bergevin's stupid, eh? He's not dumb. What, you think David Poile is?
Yeah.
You think David Poile's dope?
Well, I mean, I think his approach to issues like domestic violence are kind of dumb, but I think that overall, from a player personnel perspective, he's pretty good.
The Ribeiro move deserves no applause. I agree. Okay. That deserves no applause. But when you look at construction of this team, all I'm saying is there's more than one way to do it, and David Poile is showing us that.
Right. I agree. They will play the St. Louis, but the most exciting thing for me about the Chicago Nashville series, by the way, is that Nashville's I'm already going to Chicago for the draft. Like, I now this gives me the chance to go to Nashville potentially, like later in the playoffs and hang out there for a little bit. That's very exciting. Nashville St. Louis is in the next round, and you wanted to say the other truth teller of the playoffs was Bruce Boudreau.
Yeah, when he said the better team didn't win. Minnesota was hands down, clearly, outside of Jake Allen, the best team in this series. I know you shouldn't apologize for having a good goaltender as part of your team. But whether it's possession, whether it's shots, like everything, every metric, Minnesota series. 100% Minnesota series. Now, Bruce comes off as sour grapes by saying that. It's probably ill-timed, but he wasn't wrong. Which is why, and here you go, here's hot take of the podcast. Which is why the Stanley Cup playoffs isn't the best way to determine who the best hockey team is. The President's Trophy is.
Yeah.
That to me tells me who the best team in the NHL is. Congratulations, yeah, which Washington Capitals.
And you just described exactly why I'm always going to be against the concept of a play-in game or any of that nonsense for expanding the playoffs. Like the idea that we're going to pick and choose a playoff team based on a one-game play-in is insane.
Like, I understand that it's all entertainment, but then there's the regular season and then there's a tournament.
Yeah.
That's what we're watching. We're watching a tournament. You know, it was the regular season. If you want to just be cynical, just stop calling it the regular season and just call it playoff qualifiers.
So when you see a President's Trophy banner hanging in the rafters at Verizon Center in D.C., you are impressed?
Yep. I think you should always be impressed. At the end of a grueling 82-game schedule, I'm more impressed in a lot of ways with the President's Trophy winner than the Stanley Cup champion.
But are you essentially playing that regular season to garner a high seed in the postseason?
You think players are thinking that, or they just think about winning every game?
Well, I mean, they take it shift by shift.
So it's a long season, and a lot of things sort of come out. Now, there are a lot of teams that can ride, you know, luck or a high shooting or save percentage during the regular season. I get that, but it happens a lot more in playoffs in a small, like, little 5-game series. If you're out in five. Look, Max Pacioretty was outstanding these playoffs. I can't convince anybody of that. He had scored 8 goals.
Yeah.
No one shot more.
24 shots on goal, I think it was. It was insane.
It was ridiculous. Pacioretty was excellent.
Yeah.
He was fantastic. Just didn't score. What are you talking about, Merrick? He sucked. He vanished. He didn't get on the score sheet. Well, didn't get on your score sheet. You got an A score sheet. One that measures a whole lot of different events.
I think he's got to want it more personally.
His compete level. I just need to compete harder.
I mean, he wears the C on his chest, for God's sakes. 2 C's if you count the one of the logo. Jake Allen was, and I've already made a culpa of this all over the place. Like, he was better than I ever thought he could be in this series. I mean, like, Marty Brodeur is the goalie whisperer.
You know who told me about this? Because when he was struggling early on, Ryan Whitney. I was working with Whit one night, and we're talking about Jake Allen, and he's like, man, when I went to St. Louis camp, and I saw Jake Allen, I thought, like, this is one of the best goaltenders in the NHL, hands down. He's like, trust me, this is not the goalie you see. This goalie right now is St. Louis. This is not Jake Allen.
Because he couldn't get out of his own head.
But you know what the problem there was? Under Ken Hitchcock, it was man-to-man in the defensive zone. And so if one person misses an assignment, all of a sudden it's a showdown with that shooter and the goalie. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a lot of the shooter with no one in front of him and Jake Allen. Mike Yeo comes in, all of a sudden it's more the traditional zone, and all of a sudden Jake Allen is somehow a different goalie?
No, but it goes beyond that, man. Like, it speaks directly to the mental fragility of goaltenders, okay? It speaks to the fact that him and Hitch had heat, right? Hitch goes, Yeo comes in, they have better communication, Marty comes in, all of a sudden you got a guy really making you feel good about life. You got to also remember the history here with Allen in St. Louis. Like, he's playing under the weight of a new contract. He's playing under the weight of Brian Elliott being the belle of the ball in the previous postseason because Allen couldn't take the crease. Like, there's a lot weighing on this kid's shoulders, and all of a sudden he kind of just figures it out. So that plus, obviously, the defense and the system being a little bit in front of him all combined to make him as good as he was.
I think the Yeo thing was pretty huge.
Yeah.
Like, I know that the goaltenders can kind of be psychos. Am I wrong about that? Because, I mean, it seems like a million years ago, but it was just this season. What, didn't he go home for a couple of days? Like, they didn't take him on a road trip?
They left him home right before Hitch got fired. It was the Osgood thing.
Okay.
Now, do you think he can keep that magic going in the second round against the Preds?
Would only allow 5 goals in a playoff series? No. No, it's a hell of a story for an opening round. I don't know. Like, is that save percentage something that you're going to sustain for 16 wins and en route to a Stanley Cup? Doubtful.
So does that mean you like the Predators in the next round?
I'd call the Preds all the way from day one. Now, don't think that I'm too smart, because I also called Tampa on the other side. So just remember that. I called the Nashville-Tampa final. But I'm sticking Preds. I'm sticking yellow.
I'm sticking Preds
all the way to the Stanley Cup. Stanley Cup's going to Nashville.
Jockeys and Flames, no one cares. But the Oilers and Sharks is very exciting.
Wow.
Well, come on. What are you gonna say? Brian Elliott turned into a pumpkin. There, the end.
Well, but that was a tough one, and now the question becomes, you know, what happens with Brad Treliving?
Yeah, what is the deal there? Like, why?
I am baffled. Honestly, I think Brad Treliving should have been re-upped, you know, a long time ago. The fact that he's without contract now is baffling to me. I think he's a really good general manager.
But let me play the other side of this for a second. Is it possible this is Treliving kind of biding his time to see if
he
can?
No.
You don't think so?
Nope. No way.
To see if the Sabres come a call in and they're like, hey,
This is him waiting for the contract to arrive. GMs. Like to stay in the same place for a long time. It looks a lot better on the resume. They're not like conference hopping university professors. No.
But he's not a normal GM. His father invented Boston Pizza.
He's a business man. and owned the Central Hockey League. And I think he ran all the franchises. Like there are franchisees in Boston Pizza as well. I think I'm right on that story.
All right,
yeah, but that's going to be the interesting one. Like what happens in Calgary now? Where honestly, I think the answer should be nothing. They're like, you look at, okay, is the team getting better or getting worse? Sure, they got destroyed on their bottom six, but there's a way to fix that a lot quicker than fix your top six. And I don't think your top six needs fixing.
Fix your top six.
Your top six is good. Your top four defensemen are good. Do you need a goalie? Sure you do. And you need some help on your bottom six. These are fixable things. This isn't Chicago Blackhawks. Montreal Canadiens.
Fix your bottom six and go pay Ben Bishop some money. That's all you do.
Almost had him before. Right? Yeah. That was the guy they came calling for first at the draft. Hey, Sneakers, what's up, buddy?
Sneakers, you know, this is... She's got another dog in the apartment.
Nah,
she just wants to shut up anymore. She
just wants Treliving gone. She's on King.
She's got a lot to say. She's got a lot to say.
She just wants to hear about Sharks and Oilers, I think. Get to the Sharks.
All right, listen. Let me start with the Sharks because I'm really intrigued by this. Isn't this a weird coda for this group, like this loss? Like 4-2 to Edmonton, but there's no... Oh, God, window of opportunity. Oh, geez, Marleau and Thornton again. Oh, the Sharks, blah, blah, blah. There's none of that. Now, I know part of that is a function of them having played for the Cup last year, and part of that is a function of the Oilers being the higher seed in the series. But it's almost this weird sort of, like, subtle passing of the torch, the acknowledgement that the Shark, this is it. Like, last year was it, and now we know this is it for them.
Yeah, last year seemed like this was their only shot at it with this group, and... Oh, I thought they'd get deeper than this. But yeah, it seemed as if the series went on, they just got slower.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's that simple, but they just seem to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And Brent Burns wasn't the same defenseman that everyone handed the Norris Trophy to in January. Surprise, surprise.
I'm still going to give it to him.
You know, oh, they will. Yeah, they probably will.
No, I gave it to him in my voting. I went over Hedman. Yeah, I originally thought Hedman, but then I broke down the numbers, man. Like, his impact on that team is ridiculous. His offensive season is ridiculous. I know the argument is, well, if you're going to give it to him for this offensive season, how come you don't give it to Carlson every year? I completely agree. I'm a huge Erik Karlsson fan, but the year Brent Burns had was very, very special.
Okay, how about this one then? The San Jose Sharks have traditionally always had an elite level power play in the NHL. This year it caved in and the puck went through Brent Burns through the entire thing. Do you not hang some of the power play woes on Brent Burns?
Sure, but I mean, you know, how much of that, you know, it was. Are we really?
I'm a head guy. I'm a power play prowess. I think it's part of it. Just like Selke, I think you put on penalty kill prowess.
I'm much more interested. Oh, well, in that case, then Datsuk could never win. Because he didn't play the PK. I don't know.
31 seconds. Average of 31 seconds.
I look at even strength. I look at 5-on-5 more than look at special teams when it comes to. And I might look at the PK more than look at the power play for a defenseman, too.
Interesting.
I don't know. I think I get your point, but I mean, if you look inside the numbers as far as the possession metrics and you know, everything else that Burns was able to accomplish this year. I think it was his year, even with that swoon towards the end of the season.
This is now, like, what do you think is going through Doug Wilson's head right now? Obviously, he's got to do something about, you know, Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, UFAs. I think one of the two probably gone, maybe even both. Like, could you see Joe Thornton not with San Jose? It's possible.
It's possible.
I can certainly see them walking away from Patrick Marleau.
I could see Joe Thornton being the second line center in Toronto next year.
Nah, I don't think they do that.
No, I don't think so. Joe is going to be a great asset for us and take a lot of the pressure off of Austin, and had him with Team Canada. Good guy in the room.
The defenseman that they want. That's it.
Going to help us finally win a face-off.
That's it. Babcock's in love with face-offs, eh?
Yeah. I know it's a defenseman that they want, so where do you think they turn for that? You seem to have some inkling.
No, I don't. I honestly don't, because I don't think the guy that they would the guy that they need is out there.
Yeah, they have to wait 2 years from Daddy to be up.
I don't think they would do that. You know, it's like, just have an awful year next year and grab Rasmus Dahlin. Explain it to your fans later.
I think they're used to it. I think you could tell Leafs fans anything right now, and they'll just go for it. You know what I mean?
It's like we're gonna sit Austin and Mitch and all them out for a year, let them incubate, go for the kids.
Here's another question though. Morgan Riley's been real good. You know, Jake Gardner's been real good. You know, that's not Doughty, Carlson, Hedman, you know, Burns. They're not those guys.
Nah.
But if you have a group that can, you know, that can get the puck out quickly and efficiently, do you need the horse back there anymore? Like, I know it's a nice thing to have. I get it.
How many teams win without the horse?
I know. That's the thing that I keep coming back to. But I mean, why should, just because, you know, history has said that it's this way, why does it have to continue to be this
way?
It's not
that history says it's this way, it's that history is that way. Like, it's not.
But that's okay. But things change. The game changes. You know, with every little rule change, something changes about the game.
I feel you on that, but I'm thinking to myself, what was the last team that won that didn't have one? What, the Hurricanes?
I throw that year out.
If you want to go before the 05 lockout, the Lightning had Boyle, right? So that's not them. Devils had some defensemen.
Colorado had a couple of them too.
I don't know where you'd have to go.
I don't know.
Zuboff was on that. Yeah, you'd have to keep.
Can you win with a good blue line and not a great blue line? Is essentially what we're asking.
I think you need that one guy.
You're probably right.
You win that one guy.
Just throwing it out there for conversation.
No, it's great.
But the guy that they would want is not out there.
I'm just going to be really excited over the next couple of years to see the Leaf fans shift their attention away from John Tavares to a defenseman.
Who's offer sheetable? That's what you got to do. Because you don't need picks. If you don't need picks, Lou, come on. Ruthless Lou.
Yeah. Lou, did Lou ever offer sheets? I don't think he ever offer sheeted somebody.
I don't think he ever did.
That's the one thing that gives me pause. I mean, that's a real sort of code of honor between the GMs. I don't go after your guy. You don't go after mine.
That's back when he was in Jersey. Yeah.
That's back when he was in Jersey, and like he was probably worried that someone would probably like be able to offer sheet his guys. Well, I mean, he had the Stevens thing, but that was somebody poaching Shanahan. That's probably why it never happened to Jersey again, because Lou came away with Scott friggin' Stevens the last time somebody offered sheeted one of his guys.
I'll take that. Thank you.
Eric, come at me, bro. The Oilers did a hell of a job in this series, and there's a lot to love about this series. You love Connor, four points in six games in his first maiden voyage. You love the balance and scoring. Draisaitl scored a huge goal in the elimination game.
That's a big one. And I thought the move of putting former Stouffville Spirit, maybe the best player ever to play for a junior A hockey team here in Stouffville, Drake Kajula on the left side with McDavid there is a nice little bit.
And the best thing about him, in my opinion, was that you had a series in which Cam Talbot, you know, had one horrible game and the rest of the time was pretty good and didn't fall apart. Even though he played all those games in the regular season. So I think that's a positive sign.
Listen, man. Yeah. Good on Cam Talbot. Good on Cam Talbot. I've never been, you know, the hugest Cam Talbot fan, but he's made me eat it this year. It's been real good. Like, he's always been, nothing wrong with this. I mean, geez, you're playing in the NHL. To me, he's just been a good goalie. Nothing great. Good. But this year had a really good season.
Now, do you think playoffs, that this, really the yippy happy puppies of the Oilers are running into an old veteran hand that's going to be able to handle them in the second round? Or do you think that their momentum will push past the Duckies?
Who's healthy on the blue line?
For the Ducks?
Yeah, is Fowler coming back for this? Because I know he's skating again.
I don't know if he is.
I think Fowler's skating again.
Is that the determining factor?
I don't know. You'd like to have Vatten in there, but I mean, you're spending a lot of minutes on Brandon Montour and Shea Theodore, that next wave of Duck defensemen.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't think we mentioned on the podcast, Marty Wilford, who's the assistant coach with San Diego, with the Gulls, handles all the defense there. And he's the guy mostly responsible at the pro level, for finishing up Montour and Theodore. Guys like that never get their due, around most broadcasts, but not this one, baby. Marty Wilford, good for you, man. Great job with, Brandon Montour and Shea Theodore.
I'd like to see Kessler against, Connor's line. That'd be a fun little duel for a series.
Oh boy. That's a great line, eh, with Cogliano and Silfverberg.
Yeah. That'd be a fun matchup if they can get it. Really, and they'll have home ice in the series too. That's the other thing about the Duckies too in the series.
See, here's the nice thing too. See, you always love it when this happens. This is Anaheim facing off against a Canadian team with Connor McDavid on it on national television in Canada. I hope that we all spend enough time to appreciate how good Hampus Lindholm is.
Oh yeah.
Right? Because, you know, Anaheim doesn't get the coverage. She's not even on this podcast that they probably deserve. And Hampus Lindholm has been one of the best stories in the NHL for a couple of seasons now. Hopefully this is the series where people start to pay attention and notice how good Hampus Lindholm is.
I'll push back on Anaheim not getting coverage in this podcast. We have talked many times about how Corey Perry is a giant piss baby who eats dirty diapers. I mean, we talk about that a lot. All right, Eastern Conference. I was at the Rangers elimination game last night, 4-2 over the Habs in that series.
Yeah.
You know, Lundqvist was great. I thought there was some pretty bad hockey played in the series for stretches, but in the end, if you're a Habs fan, you're pretty not very happy right now with the idea that, okay, not only was the window of opportunity wasted when Michel Therrien was the coach and Mark Bergevin refused to admit his mistake and fire him, but now a year of window of opportunity with Shea Weber still in an effective mode in the NHL is gone because they couldn't put the puck past Lundqvist because their offense was basically Alexander Radulov and 17 guys hoping for a bounce.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like I said off the beginning of the podcast, I thought Pacioretty was really good. I really did. I know that he's looking at a bagel on a stat line, but still, I thought he was really good. What I still can't understand is how that Montreal team, how any team for that matter, and I know Lundqvist was really good, wasn't able to score on that Rangers defense.
Yeah.
Which is awful. You know, which is, look, Brady Shea is their best defenseman.
I mean, right. you saw on that Radulov goal, on the Yamalin goal last night, Radulov goes behind the net and takes the puck from McDonough and Girardi and passes it to the slot.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
Look, and man, McDonough, Girardi, Stahl, Holden all struggled. And you'll see it in the next round as well.
Pacioretty, in talking to him last night, seemed really, and Price was kind of the same way. They both seemed really content with the effort. Like, I think that they've probably been on teams where they've left series after being eliminated and thought, well, you know, that's not good. I mean, we had some passengers here. I think they felt like everybody came to play and they were happy with the effort. But you look at the team and you say to yourself, okay, what's going to happen in this offseason? And I think the one place you look is the center spot, and it brings you back to what we heard in the middle of the season, which is there a way to pry away Matt Duchene and bring him to Montreal?
Yeah, you trade Alex Galchenyuk for him. Watch.
Okay,
and what else? Well, that's it. It'll take something else, but watch. Yeah, that wouldn't shock me at all.
Oh, I think Galchenyuk might have played his last game as a Hab.
Could be.
You know.
Here's my biggest question though. And it's the same question I asked at the beginning. When I looked at this blue line, I said to myself, this is all fine and dandy, but who's breaking the puck out?
PK Subban. Oh shit.
That was a game 4. They just couldn't get that overtime, the Zibanejad winner. Or was that game 5? The 5 minutes in overtime, they just couldn't get the puck out of their own zone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying to myself, well, someone mentioned they used to have a guy who could get it out with ease mm-hmm. that nobody valued because he would do low fives with the goaltender. It was too flamboyant for Montreal.
And I mean, that's it.
Like, he's
right?
The one-man breakout. He's the one-man breakout machine.
PK's in the
They're
second
dying
round.
For someone to break the puck out, and it wasn't there.
PK's in the second round. Mark Bergevin's team that made the trade because he said that Weber would make them a better team is out in the first round. That's all you need to know.
Here. This is what I put out on Twitter last night. Let me grab it specifically. And I this one, little snarky moments. I just want to get my phrasing right here.
Phrasing. No, it's important.
Phrasing. Hold on a second here. Okay. Because I really believe this, okay? Here it is. So, if Montreal swept the Rangers and Nashville lost to Chicago, what do you think the story would be?
He was a cancer in the locker room. Everybody hated PK.
And it was the leadership of Shea Weber that allowed this to happen. That's why they brought him in. That's Bergevin's big plan. That's why they won the trade. See, here's the thing about the trade too. So they're out in the first round, and that's it. You talk about, you know, squandering the year and all that. Not as if Shea Weber's getting better, right? Yeah. And it's not as if that blue line's getting better like that. This is. Like here's another question for you. We're looking at a situation where Galchenyuk could be gone, right? PK Subban's already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And as difficult
Plekanec will be in Vegas.
Could be. Although they wouldn't have to. Oh, no, he's got one more year on term. So he could end up there. But here becomes the big question. They got one more year of Carey Price. If you're Carey Price and they start talking about doing what they probably should have been doing the last couple of years, and that's rebuilding, are you going to be without Carey Price too? Like within 3 seasons, are you going to go and eliminate Subban, Price, and Galchenyuk?
Well, I mean, it's already started. I read a tweet this morning from somebody in Montreal who said like the first 10 callers to the local radio station this morning were about trading Price.
Oh, jeez.
It's crazy. That was a softie he gave up, though, in game 6, the first goal.
Yeah, I know. Listen, it's a difficult conversation to have, but, I mean, they've gone about, you know, they've had Carey Price, they had PK Subban. I said, okay, hang on a second. We've got something here. You know, as long as we have Carey Price, we're always in it and we always have a shot. And so it's been patchwork and some things have worked and some things haven't. But the draft picks haven't panned out yet. You have Alex Galchenyuk, who doesn't really have a role, right?
Well, they've tried to give him several and nothing's really taken is the issue.
Yep. I know, and he saw time on the fourth line this year because of it, under Claude Julien. Mm-hmm. So I still think you have a question mark about who Alex Galchenyuk is.
Many believe he's
a legit first-line center. Others say not a chance.
Can you make a significant trade without giving up Sergachev is the question. Because that's the ask from everybody.
Oh, for sure, absolutely.
And if you're willing to deal him, and if you're a Montreal fan, you obviously don't, because they don't have a very good history of trading high-level defensive prospects for offensive players.
Stop trading your defensemen. I know. It's hard, man. Like, this playoffs is forcing a lot of tough questions to be answered. Chicago's got a lot to face, as we just talked about. Montreal's got a ton to face right now. San Jose does. This one's tough in Montreal because many have been saying rebuild, 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 rebuild for the last 5 years. And now after going out in the first round against the Rangers, in a year where they said, we're going to pick up the Shea Weber contract, we know it's going to be bad long term, but this is a short term play. When that's your strategy and that's your thinking, what happens when you go out in the first round? What then?
Exactly. No. All right. The Rangers are the Rangers have to feel really good about life and obviously like they're doing the Atlantic Division thing that we all thought they could do. I think as we do the show, the Ottawas and the Bostons are playing right now. And I think
Eric Carlson just hit a goalpost, by the way.
I think they beat whoever comes out of that series. So what we all thought would probably happen when the lowest seed in the Metro Division played in the Atlantic Division because of this ridiculous playoff format, they'll probably go to the conference final.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
By the way, if I could do this every day, I'd be the happiest guy. Just talk over hockey games. Not even talking about the hockey games, but just while hockey games are on, just provide a talk track.
That's what I mean. I'd be the happiest guy in the world. I wanted me and you to do an alternative commentary track for a game. And I know your boys in sports that have a lot of money.
Needs to be live. Needs to be live.
That's what I'm talking about. I'll come up there and we'll sit in a room and we'll just chat over the game.
Just chat over games. Yeah.
But the problem is,
I think you got to bring in like 4 or 5 people.
I don't know if they really want to do that though, because then like, what if our stuff gets like better buzz and better ratings in the game?
It's a different audience. But I think it's not taking any eyeballs away. You're still watching the game.
Penguins roll the Blue Jackets. Kind of all expected that to happen. Didn't expect Bob to be as horrible as he was. But again, it's amazing. What a machine, man! Like they lose no starting goaltender, missing like guys out of their top six, missing Letang.
Whatever.
Win in five.
Whatever. It's just, and Malkin gets no love out of all of it.
Yeah, right.
How many has anyone? I can't. I mean, on NBC, how much love has Malkin received in that? Did he receive in that series, or was it all about Sid?
Yeah, it was all about Sid, and it was all about Fleury. I mean, that should have been.
That's a great story because it's the mirror image of last year, right?
Yeah.
I'm happy for Fleury. I really am.
He's the nicest guy on the planet. Like, there's no reason anyone shouldn't feel good for him. But I think come on. Like, he played well. He played well at home. That was the funniest stat. Like there was a stat where it was like, Marc-Andre Fleury has been absolutely unbeatable. Parentheses, at home.
You know what was kind of nice? One of the moments this year that I really enjoyed because it was a throwback moment to a pretty significant piece of someone's individual history was when Crosby got his 1,000th point. It was a Chris Kunitz goal and Marc-Andre Fleury was in net. It was like the old band is back together.
Yeah.
The old band of Pittsburgh Penguins. That. It was a really great old school Pittsburgh Penguins hockey moment. Old school. God. Chris Kunitz and Marc-Andre Fleury. Sidney Crosby qualifies as old school now.
Yeah. And again, and
oh, and it, it, it's just from Rod Buskus as well. And I think Troy Loney got a screen in. Okay, never mind.
And Jake Gensel joins the Bri Rusts and the Connor Sheerys and everything else in the world. They just have a pipeline of young forwards in that group too. Thanks for
sharing. And they continue to prove one of the great falsities in the history of the Crosby era in the NHL, which is that it's hard to play with Sidney Crosby. Many times that story get passed around. Oh, it's so tough to find someone to play with him. Really? Because all the evidence points to the opposite. But I guess it sounds good. Oh, what's Team Canada going to do? How are you going to find someone to play with Crosby? He's got to kind of adapt to him to playing a lot on his backhand, and you're there.
It's because they made a couple of trades that didn't work. Korpikoski couldn't play with him. So.
I don't know, man. That was always a weird one. Anyway, you're right about Pittsburgh. Good for him. Right? Hammer right through.
Capitals and Leafs. There's no wrong answer in this series anymore. Like, I'd be thrilled if the Leafs rallied and won the series. That'd be super fun. It would be a bummer because I want the Caps to win so we can stop this nonsense. But, like, if the Leafs played on against the Penguins, like, that's great. That's incredibly fun. Sid and Toronto,
Matthews versus Crosby. Oh, yeah. You know, my shop, you think my shop would like it very much? The Maple Leafs against Sidney Crosby? Nah. Take a pass.
I really thought the Caps were going to lose game five, though, to be honest with you. Like,
really?
It felt like one of those games that I had seen time and time again from the Capitals where they couldn't put the team away. It went to overtime. It felt like a weird bounce visitors team goal kind of game.
Wow, maybe I don't watch enough Washington hockey because I was feeling Washington the entire way.
I wasn't. I felt the clenched sphincter of that game.
No, I was, you know, I was sitting there watching with Claire and I was like, you know, Washington's winning this thing. She's like, look at the Maple Leafs are all over. I'm like, Washington's winning this game. Maybe I just haven't watched enough Caps.
It could be that. It could be that.
But that one looked like Caps to me all the way. Mm-hmm. Killing off all those penalties, you know. Alan May finally got freaking out on Twitter saying that the refs are on the take.
And you finally got the game from Holtby you were looking for. He was great in that game.
He was really good.
He was really good in that game.
You're right. There is no wrong in this one. That's a good way to put it because already, you know, Maple Leafs lose tonight. Good on the Maple Leafs. Yeah. They showed they can skate with the President's Trophy winner. Mm-hmm. And now everybody knows they're amongst, if not the best skating team in the NHL. So whatever you want about the Maple Leafs, they can skate with anybody.
Matthews is so good.
Oh God, going away.
He's got such incredible hockey sense for a rookie.
Boston
incredible.
Scores 1-0. Top shelf over the blocker. Who is that? Get your back off the boards. Mm. Who was it? Oh, sorry. Boston just scored. Who do we got? Who's going down the train first? Oh, you're cutting the crowd shots. Look at you, Drew Stafford. Look at you pick up.
How about that?
Look at you.
And Freddie Anderson, I don't think gets enough credit. And I don't think the Leafs get enough credit for the Freddie Anderson move. I think Anderson's been lauded, but I don't think we've really tracked it back to, hey, what a smart decision that was to bring in Freddie Anderson.
I think there's been a lot of unexpected out of Freddie Anderson because here's a guy who's had a hard time, you know, getting through a season, had a hard time in playoffs. To me, he's been one of the big success stories for the Maple Leafs in the playoffs.
Yeah. They identified that. They saw something in him that maybe a lot of us didn't. And they made a bold move, and look at him now.
Bold contract. Yep, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're not wrong. And it looked bad early when they had him playing the Mike Babcock style of goaltender, which is challenge aggressively, right? Defense predicated on taking away the back door, have your goaltender challenge. And Freddie Anderson's a big goaltender, likes to be back at his net a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's why when you see goals going on the Maple Leafs, he'd be out of the frame. Like you're watching on TV, like, where'd the goalie go? That's like the Jimmy Howard once, when Lidstrom left, Lidstrom retired. And the question was, you know, is Jimmy Howard, you know, does Jimmy Howard now go back to playing deeper in his net? Because, you know, Lidstrom, who's the master of taking away the back door, is gone. And Howard's point was always, no, that's a Babcock thing. That's not a Lidstrom thing. You know, that's how Babcock likes his goaltenders to play. But once he went back, and the nice thing about, here's another thing. In Anaheim, Anderson was never really allowed to handle the puck. Now, he's not as good as Carey Price or Ben Bishop.
No.
But he can handle the puck. He can fire it. He's good at handling the puck. So, yeah, learned a lot of things about him.
All right. Couple of newsy things before we answer a little bit of mail. What was your take on the Buffalo house cleaning?
Surprised that both went.
Yeah,
and
the
amateur
surprised
scout
that Tim went.
And, yeah, I was surprised that Tim went. And the amateur head of amateur scouting and the head of pro scouting as well. Like that's a real, you know, when Greg Royce and Rob Murphy both go as well with the GM and the coach. Wow, that's angry emotional owner.
Yeah, I would agree on that. I would agree, angry emotional owner.
But hang on. How do you hang it? I guess maybe you hang, well, I guess they haven't done a job with that blue line. Like, that's the disaster of the Buffalo Sabres. The disaster of Buffalo is the blue line stinks. It's terrible. It's really bad. There's like, there's no two ways around it. There's just a bad blue line.
The blue line stinks. And I think that now Tim's getting blowback for Lehner, but I don't think that Lehner's was a lot bad this season.
It was a 925 goalie or a 920 goalie.
Do you think that the problem is that Tim's just a bad people person? Like a good wonk.
Doesn't manage upwards properly?
It doesn't manage upwards properly. Maybe doesn't facilitate communication enough with the totality of the organization. Because that's in all the talking that happened from Pegula, like over the last couple of days, like the sense you get is that there were some issues within the organization as far as everybody being on the same page. And I think I've always been struck by Murray as a guy who liked to put his head down, liked to study prospects, liked to do his job. Not necessarily the guy who liked to press the flesh, sit in corporate meetings. You know, maybe he wasn't that guy.
I believe that. Well, look at his background. What's Tim Murray's background? Scouting.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Right. Like, and I think that's him. That's where he's at his happiest.
Yep. So I think what will end up happening there is there, I would be surprised if they didn't hire a president of hockey operations type, and then hired a less experienced general manager. I think that might be the model they go with. I know there was a lot of talk after the press conferences that's not what they were going to do. I think that's what they end up doing, and I don't know if that guy's going to be Dean Lombardi or somebody else.
Well,
but
you know,
I think that's what they end up doing.
Interesting, Elliot Friedman on Hockey Night last night talking about how the Buffalo Sabres, you know, they want someone, I mean, they want someone with experience, but they also want someone who's progressive.
Right.
So they just don't want, you know, another old dog coming in with ideas from 1995.
So the smartest thing to do would be to hire that guy for hockey operations, then hire a little whip smart Julianne Brisebois as your GM. Do it that
Jason Botterill. Yeah. Some of the more common names that are out there.
But bring in your Dean Lombardi type to run the show. That's the model that works, man. Shanahan. You know? Like that model.
I don't
works.
Know. Who can get him a defenseman? Really? Whatever. Okay, bring in this guy's got experience. Can anyone get me a defenseman? Because that's what they need. And you know what I think a lot of it is, too? The owner is a very emotional and, you know, emotionally invested in the Buffalo Sabres, in the entire community, both the Bills and the Sabres. We all remember his opening press conference when he sat beside Gary Bettman and said, "I don't care if I make any money." This is right before a lockout, mind you, which Gary was, I'm sure, not amused at. He said, "If I wanted to make money, I would drill two more oil wells," which I'm sure the owner wasn't, which the commissioner wasn't thrilled about. But you know, Gilbert Perreault's there and he's got a tear in his eye talking about Perreault and the French Connection line and the history of the Buffalo Sabres. So he's emotionally attached to this thing, okay? So when you're emotionally attached to the Buffalo Sabres the way you are and are involved in a rebuild, and you look up the QEW and you see the Maple Leafs, who just leapfrogged you in 2 years, I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you look at that and that makes you livid. If them, why not us? How come we can't do that? Why aren't we that team?
Also, he has more money than he should, and he feels like he can fire people whenever he wants, despite having contract term. And that leads to hasty decisions.
Can. Yeah. You know, and as much as they may want to deny it, and of course you have to publicly, I think Jack Eichel carries a lot of weight, man.
Jack Eichel. Yeah, and he totally got him fired. Let's be honest. Don't buy any of that stuff. I don't buy a single word of that pushback. I don't believe for a second that Jack wasn't like, "I don't know, man. If that guy's still a coach, I might even come back and play."
Not re-upping here. No way.
I'm telling you.
Get me out of here.
I don't buy that. I feel bad. I feel bad that now Jack can't. Like, I feel like a lot of his aggressive pushback on all of this is that no one wants to be labeled a coach killer. but I think it's just because it got out. Not because it doesn't feel that way.
Look, very few people like their coaches. Like, let's in defense of Jack Eichel, very few are in love with their coaches.
Yeah.
Very few that you'll catch in the summer at the cottage or at the gym or wherever you bump into them at the grocery store. And how was your coach? And if you catch him in a can, they'll say, oh, great guy. Oh, I love him. Fantastic. Not a complaint.
And then the other thing, the other news today was John Stevens becoming head coach of the Los Angeles Kings under GM Robert Blake.
Yeah.
And I think this is a signal to everyone that they believe the window is still wide open for this group to win.
I don't know about that part. Although sometimes it seems as if the one thing they needed more than anything else was a new skate sharpener, because this team was slow. And that's either by construction or they haven't got the skates out of the boxes yet. Slow team. And as the game gets quicker and quicker, and you even saw, you know, Jonathan Toews yesterday talking about, you know, I got in my off-season workouts, I got to work out less heavy and get lighter and quicker. That's the way the game is. And he's already kind of a light and quick kind of guy when you look at his frame. I just don't know if you're the Los Angeles Kings, whether you have the personnel to do that, unless there's a major, major shift. I feel bad for Kopitar. Look what he had to skate with for the last couple of years. Look what he had to skate with this year. Like, you have good players. You have Doughty. You have Kopitar. Like, you have a couple of good players there. Is your window open to be competitive right now? I would still say no.
They have to still figure out what they're doing with the over $11 million in salary due to Dustin Brown and Marian Gaborik against the cap next year and going forward.
No one's touching Gaborik. You just hope that Vegas takes Brown. Don't you think?
Leadership.
Oh, boy.
Grit.
Yep.
It's a good guy to build around. They're only 32 years old, making
compete
8.575 against the cap until 2022.
Got to hit the floor, bro. Got to get to the floor, bro.
All right, and that brings us to a couple questions. And the first one is about the Vegas Golden Knights. Joseph D. wants to know, Vegas has the Golden Knights over-under at 72.5 points for the season. Would you go over or under?
Under.
For comparison's sake, the Arizona Coyotes under 70 points this year.
Under. Vegas is going to be bad.
I would take the over. It's a league full of parity. I know that
it's a league full of parity for teams that have been in it for a dozen years. This is year one. Take the under.
I'd take the over.
All right.
Kyle Cogdon wants to know, what's worse, the wave at a playoff game or the guy in the corner near the glass who stands up to wave at the camera all game?
Oh, the caveat on that guy is he has to be on his phone at the same time. Because he's talking to someone telling them that he's waving at them on television. That asshole. Yeah, that guy.
I'll say that worse than both of them were the Rangers fans chanting USA last night as the Rangers beat Montreal.
How do you think Pacioretty felt about that?
Yeah, right. Chanting USA as the Rangers
so
beat an American captain on the strength of their Norwegian goal scorer and Swedish goalie.
Oh, sports is so complicated. Oh, why does it have to be so? Chanting
finally,
USA, yeah.
Finally, Sam Blazer wants to know, out of the teams eliminated, who are the teams with the most and least potential moving forward? So I guess we're saying, of the teams that we've lost already in these Stanley Cup playoffs, which are the ones that we feel like are going to be okay? If the Leafs get eliminated, I would say that they're top of my list as far as teams that are going to be okay going forward. I think they are on the rise. The team not okay the most going forward? It seems like you might say the Blackhawks. I'd probably say the Sharks would be my point of concern.
Yeah, Sharks, Habs, Hawks. I think Calgary is going to be fine. I think if Leafs go out tonight, I think Leafs are going to be fine. They're on the uptick. I think Calgary's still on the uptick as well. Although, man, that's such a weird situation there right now. Either Habs, Hawks, or Sharks. But I think we all sort of assume that this is the end of that band. Don't you think?
Yes. I do. Which is sad.
Calgary's okay. They got a good team.
Good D. Oh, yeah. Well, hey, by the way, what'd you think of that lawsuit against Wyatt then?
Doesn't surprise me. Didn't we see it coming a sort of mile away?
Is it a situation, you think, where his like insurance or whatever would cover it?
Boy, you know, I've read so many different things about this. I am so unqualified to talk about that. I don't want to embarrass myself for this podcast by trying to do so. I don't know. The only thing that I can say about it is it was predictable, but I'm still in the camp, and I know you and I disagree on this one, that I think Weidman was dazed. And when you look up and see the body language, all he saw was something in front of him and reacted like any other hockey player does, and he got his hands up.
We do disagree, but I would say that, I mean, I don't think this lawsuit would ever go to trial. But if it did, it would be interesting to revisit that in an actual trial versus an arbitration hearing.
Yeah.
The medical evaluation of Weidman versus what Gary Bettman believed to be the case, which is that he had his wits about him.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting. All right, thanks.
Good question. Good question. Oh, yeah. Like which the teams that's okay. Like, I think Columbus is on the right track. Don't you?
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, the record is kind of phony this year, and you know a lot of the lines got caved in. But Jones-Werenski's real good. It's a good combo. Columbus is getting better.
Are they?
I think so.
They're okay.
Like, I mean, the power, they dined out on, you know, that fantastic power play. But it's not as if they're getting worse. Like, they're getting better. I just think that winning streak and that power play artificially sort of pumped up expectations for Columbus.
Yeah.
It's a double-edged sword, right? Because if Philadelphia doesn't have that 10-game winning streak this year, what are we saying about the Philadelphia Flyers? Okay, just one of those, another year for the Flyers. But you pump up a 10-game win streak, and all of a sudden, they missed the playoffs?
Like to thank producer Sam for doing this on a Sunday, and thanks to Merrick, and thanks to me. And thanks to all of you out there that will consume this podcast. Once again, we've talked right through doing an intro, and that's fine. Some people wanted to maybe hear... Leahy hoped we were going to have Mike Russo on today, but honestly, there's just too much to talk about, and we can't cede any of that time to someone who isn't me or Jeff.
Ha ha ha. Hey, Sam, pop open your mic.
Hello?
Sam, what are you really happy about today, bud?
My hometown on Sun Attack. I'm pretty thrilled.
What happened? Tell everyone. Tell the people. They need to know.
After dropping their first game of the Western Conference Final 6-1 in decisive fashion to the Erie Otters, they bounced back and won 4-3 in overtime on a beautiful goal by Matt Schmalz.
Yeah.
There you go.
The big, OHL big playoff talk for it to conclude the podcast, courtesy of our man Sam.
Big doings.
Yep.
Yeah.
I might even trek up to Owen Sound on tomorrow night to watch Game 3.
The Harry Lumley Bayshore Arena with the best fries in the OHL?
Fire up a couple OVs and get it going.
There it is. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye. Thank you.